Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour two. Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to two on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
We are very happy that we are your choice between noon and two to have a little fun, hang out. It's a great Friday afternoon in the city. Talk to in the city, beautiful. So turn us up. If you've got HD radio, you should really be listening to us on 104.3 HD2. I'm telling you, you'll hear the bass in my voice.
And the music bits slap a little harder.
Yeah, they slap a lot harder, Tony. They really do. So if you've got, look, if you're listening on, if you're someone that's just, I love being on 670 and it's preset one for me, I'm down. I'm just saying that it could be a better listening experience for you if you have HD in your car. That's all I'm saying. 104.3 HD2. And I'll tell you this much, on days when it rains, that's when you definitely want to listen. And that's where you want to listen to Cubs games. It sounds so good. Sports on FM sounds so good. And if you don't believe me, wait until football season and listen to a Bears game on 105.9. You can hear that bass in Tom's voice. You hear a little bit of everything. Someone texted in about the Cubs and them being on ESPN so often. Sexer from the 815 says, Lawrence, do you think they were getting the Sunday night Cubs games in the early part of the year because of a projected poor record? And I said, no, I haven't looked at the schedule for Sunday night baseball, but I would imagine that the back end of the Sunday night schedule is filled with Red Sox Yankees. It's filled with the Astros and it's filled with the Dodgers. So I don't think that ESPN was like looking at the Pecota projections of the Cubs being what was a 79-win team and then saying, well, we better get these Cubs games out of the way before the Cubs are bad. I don't think that's the case. It's entirely possible, but I don't think that's what they were doing when they put their schedule together. I think that they want to finish with the teams on the East Coast, and I suspect that there'll be a ton of Yankees, Red Sox, Rays games, and then they'll shoot out west for Astros and Dodgers at the end. Maybe a Milwaukee game, put the MVP on TV. Speaking of the Cubs, I'm going to have Wilson Contreras and Albert Almora Jr. with me at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern on June 25th. So you got 11 days. If you would like to be a part of our Cubs on Deck luncheon series, there's tickets that are still available for this. It's going to be a cool event. So if you want to be in the room with Wilson Contreras and Albert Almora Jr., go to 670thescore.com/on deck. Again, that's 670thescore.com/on deck. Get yourself some tickets. Come out and hang out with us. Have lunch with us. It's going to be great. We're going to have a good time. We're going to talk some Cubs baseball. We'll talk about some other stuff too. I want to talk catching with Wilson Contreras. And we're going to have fun. So just make sure you're there. 670thescore.com/on deck. This hour is being brought to you by the Honda CR-V. Search ContinentalHonda.com for the Continental difference. If you didn't know, now you know. David Montgomery has signed a four-year deal. The Bears went out and targeted a running back, and they got the guy that they wanted to help run this offense that they run, this RPO offense that they run. Obviously, he was going to sign. There wasn't going to be a problem, but they did get it done today. It was made official today that it's a four-year deal for David Montgomery. In scouting David Montgomery, I've been talking to a lot of people about him, and it's interesting. I don't know if I can remember people being this outwardly excited about a Bears draft pick. There doesn't seem to be a lot of skepticism when it comes to him. So I wanted to share this with you because I've talked to a couple people about it. Earlier in the week, I talked with Brian Baldinger, okay? Here's what he said makes Montgomery a special player.
You're going to see David Montgomery at Iowa State this year, and I do Big 12 games on Saturday, and this guy has got incredible contact balance. And I think that's why they were willing to get rid of Jordan Howard. I think they thought they could get a fresher guy in that's a lot like what Kareem Hunt was in Kansas City a couple years ago, same type of player, same speed, same coach, same system. And he can be, you know, just a rotation back with what else they have there.
It's so funny because everyone that I've talked to about David Montgomery, Brian, has kind of said the same thing that you has. I had one guy say the guy's Superman. So you saw him up close. What makes him so special?
Well, I'm just that. I mean, when I say contact balance, I mean, he is a difficult guy to tackle. And you can hit him, and he bounces off a lot of tackles. He keeps himself alive. He spins. He's got a strong lower body. He's got incredible balance. You know, I mean, there's very little he can't do with the ball, and he doesn't fumble. He traps the ball to his body, and he's a complete team guy. I mean, if you want him to block, he can block. If you want him to catch, he can catch it out of the backfield. I mean, he's a real all-around back. He's just the only thing he lacks is he doesn't have great speed. But Kareem Hunt didn't have great speed. I mean, all these guys, guy in Pittsburgh was a 4.65 guy. Kareem Hunt was a 4.62 guy. Montgomery's a 4.63 guy. I mean, they're all in the 4.6s, but it's their balance and their ability to run between the tackles that is going to make him a good NFL back.
So that was Brian Baldinger talking about David Montgomery. And when he said, you know, Montgomery doesn't fumble, I spent a lot of time going back over his highlights. Now, it's not every snap, it's his highlights. One thing that I noticed about Montgomery, and I'm curious to see if it continues in the NFL, he seems to only carry the ball in his left arm. Like, even when he's running on the right sideline, and usually one of the things they teach you is switch over so that if the ball is fumbled, it's fumbled out of bounds, and that you have a loose hand free to stiff arm someone. But he seems like he likes to really keep it high and tight in that left arm. I can't wait to kind of see him at training camp to see if that's something that continues. Now, you heard me in that cut with Baldy reference someone who called him Superman. Well, the guy that called him Superman is my buddy Michael Felder. Now, Michael Felder does really good breakdowns of college players for Stadium Network, and he's tremendous with the film. And I asked him to do a deep dive on all of the Bears draft picks, and he did it. He came in. We did a great podcast on it. So I wanted to pull from that because I asked him about Montgomery. Listen to the breakdown and review that he gave the Bears draft pick.
He's Superman. I mean, he steps on the scene and he gets better every game. He is a steady Eddie. Like, I love, there's a suddenness to his feet that you can see the trigger, the kind of the synapses firing from when his eyes see something to when his feet do it. It's no time because he recognizes that linebacker's leaning too far. I'm going to get inside of him, or that linebacker's leaning too hard. I can put a shoulder into him and I can take an extra 5 yards because he is out of position to tackle me because, oh yeah, I'm a big boy. Like, I'm a strong running back. I can run through arm tackles. I can make those plays, but he understands when to press the edge, when to cut upfield, and he has there's a thing that I really appreciate in running backs, which is guys that cut their losses. I'm not a huge fan of guys that dance and that will lose yards for you. I don't want negative plays. I will take a positive 2 yard play over what a maybe that ends up being a 7 yard loss. Give me that positive 2, give me the positive 4, give me the positive 7. And Montgomery does have that speed. If he gets into the open field, he has a little bit of speed to pick that, to turn that 7 yard run into a 12 yard run if you give him a little bit of a crease because of the power and the speed combination that he possesses.
With the system that Nagy runs, is he a good fit?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's a perfect fit for any. I think he is one of the running backs that is system independent. He can do a lot of different things. He can run. He's run zone. He's run power. He can run outside zone. He can run inside zone. He can do leads. He can work a counter tray. He can do all those different things. And he excels at all of them because his running style he's not a one cut and go runner, but he can do one cut and go things. He's not a, I need a lead blocker runner. But he has run behind a lead blocker, and he recognizes how to play off of the guy that's leading him through the hole. So he can do a lot of different things. I think that watching him run is going to be really fun.
So that's what Michael Felder said. I don't mean to give you, like, super crazy expectations on a guy. I just think that people who watch that guy closely think that he could be a real difference maker. And when I hear people talk about a guy that much, I'm wondering, like, why did he last so long in the draft? Now, that's not to say that the scouting community in the NFL doesn't get it wrong. It may say that they don't value the running back position as much anymore, which is, it makes a lot of sense. You usually kind of churn and burn through these guys. But it seems as if, from a specific to the Bears standpoint, they may have found someone that really fits what they want to do better than we kept talking about them needing a combination back. Like, if you could turn Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard into one person, then you really got something. And maybe that's what they found, along with still having Tariq Cohen, who is one of the deadliest weapons in the NFL. My guy, when we were talking about this, Brad Evans, Yahoo Noise, he thinks that David Montgomery is going to be a prized fantasy back this year. I think he had him as like a top 20 player or something like that when we discussed it. So, man, I hope that he can live up to some of the lofty expectations. And yeah, 312 Texter, he's not super fast. That's the thing. But if we're talking scheme specific and he fits what you want to do, I hope this works out for the Bears the way that they intended. So I told you at the start of the show, I had stuff for the Cubs, the White Sox, the Bears, the Bulls, and the Blackhawks today, right? So I haven't gotten to Blackhawks and Bulls. Let me get to the Blackhawks real quick, and then we'll save some time a little bit later on for the Bulls. While I was watching the Stanley Cup Final Game 7, Doc Emrick laid some history on me about the Blackhawks and the Blues that I didn't know. And it was cool to hear it in the broadcast, and then I did a little bit of follow-up on this. So check out what Doc Emrick had to say about the connection between the two franchises.
In 1967, created as the last of the second six, the franchise was going to go to Baltimore, but for a franchise fee of $2 million and $4 million to buy the old St. Louis Arena from the owners of the Blackhawks, the Blues were in business. And we all remember New Year's Day when we were at Notre Dame and the Blackhawks were playing the Boston Bruins. The Blues were sitting at 34 points. They were not dead last yet. They were tied for it. Later, a couple of days later, they were dead last.
So I didn't know that, okay? I didn't know that there was that sort of connection between the two franchises. So I did a little bit of digging, and check out this paragraph. This must have seemed a little peculiar, especially to hockey fans in Baltimore, when an ownership group had submitted an application but was told it would get a team only if a group from the approved list dropped out. But things were happening behind the scenes. Bill Wirtz and James D. Norris, owners of the Chicago Blackhawks, also own the St. Louis Arena, which was built in 1929 but had become decrepit after decades of out-of-town ownership. Wirtz and Norris wanted to sell the building, and as told in 2013 by Rick Ackerman at Lighting the Lamp, granting St. Louis an expansion team was a brilliant way of unloading a near worthless relic on a willing buyer. So the Blues don't exist if Bill Wirtz doesn't own a piece of property that he doesn't want. So this led me down a rabbit hole because I joked about it on Twitter, how you have the Blackhawks playing a significant role in the health of the Blues, and you have George Halas saving the Packers. In the history of Chicago sports, you have that, those two things happening. And so my man, Jack Silverstein, ran with this on Twitter. He does some of the best sports threads on Twitter that you will find, and you should be following him at Reed Jack. He did a whole thing. He just kind of took what I said and started breaking all of it down, like the relationships between the what happened with the Blackhawks and the Blues and what happened between the Bears and the Packers. It's really excellent. It's in his timeline, and you should 100% go check it out if you're interested in that type of weird kind of sports connection. A texter says, don't forget about Mike Montgomery or Mike Davis. I'm good on the Mike Davis thing. If he's great, great. But I think that it's easier to get more excited about Tariq Cohen and David Montgomery than Mike Davis. I'm just saying. If he helps them, fine. We need to take a break. We will get to the NBA Finals and the Bulls. Strangely enough, the Bulls are actually kind of in the basketball news right now. Basketball news! They're in the basketball news! We will do that next here on The Score.
Bulls fans, next Thursday night, the Bulls have the 7th overall pick in the draft.
The Chicago Bulls select Wendell Carter Jr.
And starting at 6, here our team of Bulls experts rank down the NBA draft exclusively on 670thescore.com.
Marketing topside 3. Got it! Big shot!
Starring the Bulls broadcast team of Chuck Swirsky, Bill Wennington, and Steve Cashel. The Score's David Schuster, Tony Gill, Cody Westerlin from 670thescore.com, and more. Again, due to the Cubs game, listen to our live NBA draft coverage exclusively on 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Friday night is usually I can just tell you, it's a good night for me to fall asleep on the couch watching baseball. And West Coast baseball is a good trigger for that. So I'm going to try not to fall asleep during Cubs-Dodgers tonight on the West Coast, especially because maybe I'll be so amped up about the White Sox game that I'll be up until 2, 3 in the morning. They've got Giolito going to the bump tonight, trying to get to 500. This segment is being brought to you by Comcast Business. Every day, Comcast Business is helping businesses big and small go beyond the expected to do the extraordinary. Because beyond a simple transaction, there is a making of a customer for life. Comcast Business, beyond fast. Take your business beyond at ComcastBusiness.com. U.S. Open coverage is brought to you by the BMW Championship at Medina Country Club, August 13th through the 18th. If you've never been to Medina, man, it is beautiful. Visit BMWChampionship.com. No one can stop Brooks Koepka. He's too in shape. Can't stop him. I might have a surprise for you before we get out of here at 2 o'clock, so stay tuned. I promise that I get to all five of the teams today. Bulls, Blackhawks, White Sox, Cubs, and Bears. So we've done everyone but the Bulls. Yesterday, I had this conversation with Mark Schanowski of NBC Sports Chicago. And I was more than a little surprised at how active the Bulls' name keeps coming up in rumors around the NBA. So Mark and I talked about that.
Casey and I are both against the Lonzo Ball thing. I just feel like that is just a minor upgrade over what you get with Chris Dunn. I would hate to see them cash in a number 7 pick, or even the possibility of them trading for the Lakers pick, which is number 4 overall, and including Zach LaVine. I mean, I think sometimes you get too infatuated with what might be instead of what you have right in front of you. And with the steps that Zach LaVine took this year towards becoming, a borderline all-star player, I would be dead set against cashing him in for another draft pick.
Well, there's a lot of like rumors about the Bulls out there. I've even seen them in some circles attached to maybe they do an AD trade with the Pelicans. What do you think is actually possible for them to do as far as a trade with that number seven pick or stuff that might be on their roster?
Well, I think if they want to get involved as a third team in the Anthony Davis talks between the Pelicans and Lakers, I think they probably could get Lonzo Ball just by including their number seven pick to sweeten the pot for New Orleans. The Pelicans aren't that enamored with some of the young players that the Lakers are offering. Brandon Ingram, of course, has the health issues now after he had the blood clot scare last year, which ended Chris Bosh's career. They're not saying it's to that level in terms of an impact on his career, but it's something that you have to keep an eye on. They're looking for a third team to come in and offer them, you know, a high pick, a high lottery pick, and maybe another young player so that maybe they end up with Kyle Kuzma, a player from another team, and two top 10 picks. That probably would do it to get an Anthony Davis trade done. As far as the Bulls are concerned, you know, I think right now they are looking at all options. There's a chance they could try to get involved in the Mike Conley talks, because the interesting thing about Conley, even though he's got a bloated contract, he's got two more years left on that deal, which would put him on the same timeline as Otto Porter. You could try to make the playoffs the next 2 years with Porter and Conley as your veteran leaders, and then those guys come off the books. Then you've got more to sell to potential free agents that hey, our young nucleus has developed at this point, and maybe you want to come on board. That would be the long play to try to do it. They could also just try to make their picks at 7 and 38. I hope that with the return of Wendell Carter Jr. and hopefully some health for the rest of the guys, that there just be a natural growth from the nucleus that they have right now.
Where do you fall on the they should bring Derrick Rose back spectrum?
You know, I will admit right off the top that Derrick was one of my favorite players to watch. You know, obviously he wasn't that outgoing with the media, but I thought that he was very sincere. I always enjoyed, you know, covering him and the brief conversations that we had. And so, you know, I have some sentimentality there. He was my son's favorite player as he was watching the game. And just from a story standpoint, you know, we in the media love good stories. I think it'd be fantastic. You could argue both sides of it, whether it's the best thing for the Bulls basketball-wise. But when you consider some of the names that are being bandied about, you know, Ricky Rubio and Darren Collison and Patrick Beverly and Corey Joseph, I would argue that Derek could have more impact than any of those guys, especially if you played him off the bench in controlled minutes.
That is some interesting stuff from Mark Schanowski about where the Bulls are and if they're going to make moves. And I don't know if I need the Bulls to be active. And I'm saying that, like, trying to be as fair to them as possible, that I don't know if I look at them as trading Zach LaVine or trying to make a trade, something that would get me excited. When it comes to them, I'm just looking at whether or not the guys that they have invested time in, and in LaVine's case, money in, are they moving towards becoming championship level players? Now, what Kawhi winning the NBA championship does is it changes the metric of what we thought builds a championship team. Over the last 5 years, actually, I guess technically over like the last 9 years in the NBA, we thought, well, you can only win a championship if you put together a superstar team. And there's the outlier. There's the Dallas Mavericks outlier in there. And now this is the way that the Raptors won the title is kind of a throwback. They threw it back to, you have one superstar, maybe an emerging player. So you have Kawhi and Siakam, and then nothing but role players around those guys. Nothing but role players.
But wasn't that Dallas?
Yeah, but I'm saying that, are we seeing that this is that Dallas was more than an outlier, or are these two outliers on what is the real truth of how to build an NBA championship?
I've been saying for a few years that 2016 just skewed everything. It put the NBA into a funhouse mirror. So now that a lot of those contracts are coming off the books, and now we're kind of getting regulated into the new financial environment, you are going to see the talent a little more dispersed now. So it's going to, it's regulating itself. The NBA is getting back to that where it's not even feasible anymore to be able to squeeze in three or four stars. It's going to be one and an elite cast, or two and an average cast around it, or three and a bunch of bums, and you better hope that nobody gets hurt. That's what it's been moving towards ever since that that weird cap spike.
Well, I'm with you on that. I thought it was a really interesting way to look at where the Bulls are at right now, and how can they go about building. Can they find a star at seven? Yeah. Can they find a star at four? Yeah. But most people tell you that this is a three-person draft. Now, I'm on the record as having liked Jarrett Culver. And there's some people like, well, he won't be there at seven. I feel like seven's almost exactly where Jarrett Culver will be. And he seems to be the perfect type of Bulls pick. But since I've got Campy and Tony here, and they love their NBA, what was last night like for you guys watching the Raptors hold on and Klay Thompson tear his ACL?
For me, it was like, you know what? Do I really want to see Game 7 without, you know, Durant and Klay Thompson? I mean, we've already been kind of stripped of like a full series of everybody being healthy already. Just seeing a diluted version of that in Game 7 would have been like, eh. I mean, of course, I would have watched it, but the feeling of, oh, this is an all-time great like matchup wouldn't be there. But all in all, I still enjoyed the basketball. All the tactician moves made by Nick Nurse and Steve Kerr going back and forth. It was a great series for basketball fans. I get the star power wasn't there for like the casual fan, but the hoops fans were very, very happy with how the series ended up.
Yeah, it was fun to watch Kawhi do his thing. He was incredible. The bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Wildcats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa. Season tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. And this segment is being brought to you by Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. Get summer savings on everything. Save over $6,100 on a new 19 GMC Acadia and save over $5,200 on a new 19 Buick Encore. Anthony Buick GMC in Gurnee. For offer details, visit anthonygurnee.com. I told you I'd have a surprise for you on the show today, and I am really excited that surprise came through. Joining me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from, a guy that does nothing but make plays. Bear safety, Eddie Jackson, joining me here on The Score. Eddie, how are you, man?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited about tomorrow. So you're going to do a charity softball game?
Yes, sir. A charity softball game, the offense versus defense. You know, a good way to interact with the fans, you know, and also to give back a little bit.
Okay, well, so if you want to go, it's going to be at Boomer Stadium in Schaumburg. Gates open at 4. There's going to be a home run derby at 4:30. And this is a rain or shine event, because I looked at the forecast and it got a little rain in it. So no matter what, this is going down.
Yes, sir. It's going down, most definitely.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple Bears questions. You guys just finished up mini camp. What's the vibe like around your squad right now?
Oh, man, this, you know, energy level is very high. You know, everyone's mind is in one. You know, everyone knows what we're trying to accomplish after what we went through last year, you know, coming up short first-round playoffs. So right now we're just focusing to get better, you know, just continue to improve and, you know, be a better team than last year and also get the Super Bowl.
So how do you take the experience of losing in the playoffs and use it as motivation, but not use it as something that's defining you?
Man, you know, it's easy. You know, when you just put everything down and, you know, just sit back and you just and look and reflect on what we had and what we had to overcome. You know, guys who've been here, you know, 2 seasons ago when we was, 5-11 or 4-12 or whatever it was, and come and see me bounce back to what, a 12-14, and just when you see the success and you know, for us to be a new team with new coaches and new faces around, and for us to have that much success in 1 year, imagine, you know, year two when everyone's together and everything's clicking. So you just use that as fuel to the fire, man, and don't look at the negative part about it. We could have did this, could have did that. We just use it to what we're going to do, you know, how we can reflect and how we can prepare this thing. So,
Bear safety Eddie Jackson joining me here on The Score. How was Bears 100?
Man, it was fun. You know, it was a fun time, you know, just to sit around and meet guys, you know, Hall of Famers players and guys that played and helped build this tradition and the legacy they left behind after the game. And, you know, just to hear some of the stories that were shared, you know, the passion that guys, to see the passion that guys had for the game while playing and what the game meant to them, it was fun. And also, you know, to be around the greatest fans in the world when, you know, with all your guys, when you do that, it's always going to be a good time.
Who was the player that you were most looking forward to meeting?
You know, I wanted to meet Mike Brown. I got to meet Mike Brown, you know, Gary and Doug, you know, those guys, you know, their stories. But for me, the highlight of my day was meeting Mike Ditka. You know, that was one of the guys, you know, you grew up hearing about, seeing on TV and things like that. And actually, you know, getting to shake his hand was one of the, you know, highlights of my night.
It looked like it. I wasn't there, and I had some FOMO on it. I really felt like, man, I should have gone to that thing. It looked like it was insane with as many fans that showed up.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, it was a wonderful turnout. You know, and like I said, we got the greatest fans in the world. You know, for us to be, you know, one of the oldest teams in the NFL, and you know, we're not going to get to experience this ever again. You know, of 100 years. So this was just a great feeling. You know, a great feeling. Like I said, just to be around the guys, the fans, and just your teammates, and being able to give back to the fans for all the support they gave us throughout these last 2 years. You know, it's just a wonderful feeling, man.
If you want to follow Eddie on Twitter, you can at Bojack39, that's fantastic. If you want to see him play softball, you can do that tomorrow at Boomer Stadium. 4 o'clock, the gates are going to open up. There's going to be a home run derby. It's going to be offense versus defense, and it's a rain or shine event. I'm going to be doing the PA, the public announcing of the game. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And lawn seats are as low as $10, and they go to a really, really good cause. What cause are you hooking up with, Eddie?
A portion of money. It will be raised to go to my Remain the Reach Foundation. So it's basically a foundation for juveniles, you know, with criminal records, just to, you know, show them that it's never too late, that it's always room for you to get better, room for improvement. You know, growing up, you know, a lot of young guys and teenagers, you know, they fall to victim of their neighborhood or what they grew up around. So right now it's just to create a better outlook and an outcome for them, you know, for their future.
All right, I got a couple more football questions for you before I let you go. What's Chuck Pagano like?
Oh, he's cool. You know, he's very down to earth. You know, he's more vocal than Coach Vic, you know, because Vic was a quiet guy, laid back, real mellow. You know, Coach Chuck is more vocal, you know, speaks his mind a little more. But, you know, he's cool. You know, he's open to things. If we give him some feedback, he's open to, you know, always taking what we have to say into, you know, in consideration and, you know, changing things around. And, you know, it feels the same, you know, as if Vic was still here. You know, some little things we got to tweak and, you know, just the trust level. You know, you go in, you see that's a guy you can trust, you know, and vice versa. So, he's loving it right now.
Last year, Khalil Mack was kind of dropped into your defense, and you guys had an incredible year with him being one of the best players in the game. After having a whole season with him and now an off season with him, what's the experience of playing with that guy like?
Man, it's a great experience. You know, it's the same. You know, when Matt came here, man, he fit in just perfect. You know, you wouldn't even tell he was at another team for, what, 4 or 5 years. You'd think he was here there his whole time, his whole NFL career, man. And that's just one of the guys. That's the type of guy he is. You know, he's real humble. You know, he's a brother. You know, and that's my guy. You know, I hang out with him a lot, you know. So that's one of the guys, you know, you can talk to, you know, of anything. And he goes always tell you the real, always remain humble and work hard. You know, that's one person when it's time for practice, you never got a question. Is he going to come give his best today, or win the weight room? If he's going to come give his best today, you know, get him 110% all around the board every day, day in, day out. So it's a privilege to play with him. And, you know, when you see him go out there and make plays and how hard he works, that makes you want to work harder and, you know, make more plays. So that right there was just a boost of our defense. You know, we already had talent, but we just had to show him that when he came over here, he wasn't going to be alone. You know, we wasn't going to just put it all on him. We wanted to show him that you got other guys around you that's going to make plays as well. And that right there, that just helped us. And we just rolling with it and keep clicking.
You brought up Mike Brown, and I spent a lot of time covering those teams. And I actually was hanging out, not to name drop, but I was hanging out with Mike Brown and Charles Tillman this past week at the White Sox game. And your name came up. You're getting close to where those guys were when it came to defensive touchdowns. What's your philosophy when you get the ball in your hands when it comes time for you to score?
Oh, man, I just turned into an offensive player. You know, I played receiver background, played punt return in college, and, you know, that's always been something that was fun to me. You know, coming out of college, I was always an offensive guy. You know, I was never the type of safety that just want to catch a million picks and just get down and go out of bounds. My mindset was always different. When I get the ball in my hand, I'm going to score. You know, always trying to capitalize off the little opportunities I do get with the ball in my hand. And, you know, that right there just plays a lot of role in that with the mindset that I have when I'm able to get a turnover. And, you know, right now we're teaching that to everyone in the defense. Man, when you get a turnover, don't just think going out of bounds. You know, don't think going down. Think touchdown. You know, you think bigger outcomes and bigger things are going to happen. And, you know, we teaching each other just to know the person who's close to the receiver to turn to the closest blocking receiver and block him, you know, but he won't be able to make the play. So things like that right there is just, you know, we keep drilling at the tight head and the defensive head. And as you see how many touchdowns we had, you know, it was kind of cool, but we want to capitalize and have more this year.
Eddie, I appreciate you jumping on. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. I want to know if you can hit. That's going to be I know you can hit on the football field. Now I got to find out if you can hit a softball. Are you going to win the home run derby or what?
Yeah, I'm definitely for it. So, man, I'm putting anything on me, man. I'm taking me. I'm going to take it.
Okay. All right. Well, and also, but I can't let you go without saying this because I just graduated back in May. Roll Tide.
Yeah, Roll Tide. Roll.
Thank you, Eddie.
Roll damn Tide.
You better believe it. Roll damn Tide. Eddie, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Eddie Jackson, he's going to be at Boomer Stadium. There's a big softball game, offense versus defense. And you know the guys that he hangs out with. So come on out to Boomer Stadium in Schaumburg. The gates open at 4. The derby's at 4:30. And it's a rain or shine event. So don't think, oh, well, it's a little bit cloudy. We're not going to do this. We're totally going to do this and see what happens. Thanks to Eddie Jackson for jumping on with us. Back after this on The Score. A big thanks to Eddie Jackson for dropping by the show. If you're out in the Schaumburg area tomorrow, you should come by the Boomer Stadium. We're going to have a good time with the charity softball game, and I really like what Eddie is trying to do in the community with the idea of second chances for teenagers. That's good. That's really good stuff for people that maybe make some mistakes and they want to rebuild their lives. Tonight is exciting. I'm really excited about what's going on the South Side tonight. Giolito and Sabathia tonight. And the Cubs, they could use a road win. So they're going to send Kyle Hendricks out there. His road splits haven't been great either. But they're going to send him out there tonight. So there's some baseball to be had. I'm going to talk with McNeil and Parkins about all of that stuff coming up next here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Pizza.
Well, not quite yet, because I have the opportunity to hang out with McNeil and Parkins. Thanks to the crew, Tony Gill with a great job. Tony's had he's been real busy the last couple of days because I surprised him with some sweet tickets yesterday, and he was already out there at White Sox doing work, talking to people, learning about baseball. And then he had to roll right back in here and get all of my production demands done before noon.
This is a big summer for Tony, isn't it? This is a coming-of-age sort of summer in his broadcast run.
Mac, it reminds me a lot of when I used to work for you, and we went to... We went up to Platteville.
Oh, yeah, you, me, and Jigs. But the return trip home at that little saloon in Stockton, Illinois.
Stockton, Illinois, where we saw the tractor pull and everything else that looked like Pleasantville.
It felt so weird. We really did. It felt like we were pulling into a scene from Pleasantville.
We were literally in different cars.
Yeah.
We were in different cars.
Same vibe.
We made it.
And just both of us decided to stop at the local bar and have a beer.
Yeah, and I said, well, Lawrence, let me take you inside. right, I'll play Nick Nolte, and you can be Eddie Murphy. You know, they're going to love you. I think the name of the place was Torchy's, too.
I think you're right. It was Torchy's.
Welcoming.
Heard of him now, man?
Tony is going through a lot of that, and it's so weird to kind of introduce him to people. And someone hit him with, you know, Kevin Cross. We were hanging out with him from NBC Sports Chicago. He's like, yeah, I heard you talk about something. Like, he actually, like, gave Tony props for something that he said on the air. So Tony's having
Don't act shocked, Lawrence.
Wait, what?
Don't act shocked. People do like what I say sometimes.
But usually not real smart people like Kevin. usually you've got a different crew of people who are backing up what you like.
Chop him right down. You want back sass your host, Tony? Take that.
But he's having a great summer, and he's doing incredible work out there in the field.
It's the best thing to watch these young guys grow.
He's on his grind during bowl season, too.
He's going to be in charge someday, and it's going to be awesome. How are you guys doing?
I'm outstanding, and like you, I was touched by the Bridgeport Angel last night. That might have been the best hot dog I've ever had, and it was a really cool game to be at. It was a gorgeous night. Always fun when our town yields to fans of another club, as we always do when the Yankees are in town.
Red
they
Sox
were well
too.
Represented, yeah. So it was cool. There was a bit of a buzz in the park last night. I'm not going to deny that. I don't know. Yeah, I think it's weather related as much as it is pulling to within one game of 500.
Weather related. I think you had White Sox fans responding to how boisterous the Yankees fans were in the ballpark, and it's fun. Like, look, I know my team's not good. I know that. But they're interesting, and I'm having fun watching White Sox baseball, which is not something that I thought that I would be having in the middle of June.
Exactly.
Well, and who's contributing to the wins, I think, matters.
Guys who
a lot.
Are going to be here, yes.
And then the only thing, I've seen a lot of conversation among White Sox fans, and I heard you talking about it a little bit, about getting to 500. And it's undeniably cool, and it's a benchmark, and tonight's game will feel big. A weekend game against the Yankees, Sabathia going for his 250th career win against Lucas Giolito, who might start the All-Star game for the American League after being the worst pitcher in the American League last year. Like, tonight is a legitimately fun, big-time game. But I would still say that being 500 doesn't matter at all in baseball. Like, there are so many examples of
No,
teams.
It does. And I don't think anybody thinks it really does. It's just ahead of schedule, and it's cool.
But
500 is unexpected, it feels better than it should.
Absolutely. But I was just going over some of the teams that have been really good recently. It's not like the NBA where you got to get to this level and then get to this level and then get to the next. Like, the Cubs went from 73 wins in 2014 to 97 in 2015. The Royals jumped from 72 to 86. The Red Sox in 2012 won 69 games. Then they won 97 in 2013. Then in 2015, they were back down at 78 wins. And then the next year, they were up to 93. Like, you can take 15, 20, 25 win jumps in baseball when your team's actually ready to win.
But here's the thing about that. I don't know if any of us thought that the White Sox this year were going to be able to take that jump from being a 100 loss team. Like, there were people who were like, well, wait, what do you mean the White Sox are going to win 72? Like, that's crazy.
Right, right.
And now that doesn't seem crazy. And it's the why that matters.
Absolutely.
That you're not doing it with a bunch of rental, like, veteran players that you found. You have come about this in a very honest way with guys that you scouted, that you have now developed. The White Sox should get a ton of credit. Coop should get a ton of credit for the development that's happened with Lucas Giolito. And it's the fact that it's those guys leading the charge.
Definitely.
That makes this feel a lot more sustainable and real. Like, it feels more satisfying than if it were Yonder Alonso, for example, that were leading the charge. You'd be like, okay, I mean, it's cool, but
right.
how's Moncada and Anderson
exactly.
and Aloy doing?
I completely agree, and we are Sports Radio 670 The Score, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX and HD2 Chicago, a radio.com sports station. I'm just saying, because those guys are the ones that are leading this season of White Sox baseball, perhaps ahead of schedule, whether or not they lead them to 74 wins or 84 wins doesn't really matter, because they're the ones doing the leading.
Well, 84 might win. I mean, that might matter.
If they win 84 games, that actually might matter.
A wild card in the American
League.
They're
two and a half games out of
the last wild card.
They're two and a half out of the second wild card with five teams
in front of them.
Yeah, so they're not going to – and overwhelmingly likely, they're
not going to.
But that doesn't matter at all. Like, the fact that they're young and fun, I think the most interesting thing that's going to come a lot sooner than that conversation for the White Sox is, what do you do with these relief pitchers that have value and you have one more year of control? What do you do with Herrera? What do you do with Colome? Because you can get stuff for them, but if you think you're ready to win next year, you need those guys. So I think that's a really tough call that you could argue both sides of if you're Rick Hahn.
I think McCann, too. I think that they may have found something, and that he's someone that I want on this team as it improves. And I'm not saying as the everyday catcher, but I think that there is value in him. And that's another guy who's, 28? That, considering the way that he's hitting, I would imagine that there are teams that are like, we could add a James McCann to our roster of our championship team that's ready, and he can be the guy that catches 2 days a week for us, and we can use him to win a title.
How many more years is McCann under club control?
One next year, right? Arbitration.
It's only one.
I think it's 1 year of arbitration control with him next year. So to me, I'm not saying that you extend him. I'm just saying that don't be in a rush to trade him. Is my thing.
And I don't. I think that if I had to bet on it, and I hadn't considered him much recently, I would think that they don't trade him because they could say, why mess with Giolito?
Correct.
Why mess, you know, keep it consistent for your pitchers.
The dude
now
is passing the audition thus far, so there's no reason. And we decided in section 129 last night, if you don't do anything with your Yolmer Sanchez jersey if you have one, because he's welcome to stick around for several more years to be in a once Nick Madrigal and others are ready, there still is a spot for little Yolmer. I don't want to imagine a White Sox world where they compete for a division title without him.
I love a White Sox team where Yolmer Sanchez is your 25th guy.
He is sparky.
I would love that.
And that would be fine with me. Yeah, it was fun. And I got there just in time to see Chicago radio legend Steve Dahl throw out one of three ceremonial first pitches last night.
Didn't Darren Georgia almost get it again? The cameraman?
Yes.
Didn't he almost get it again last night?
But she Ephus pitched it. She lost it on the backswing. It went straight up into the air, so it would have done no damage. And then he made a play under the ball like he was a center fielder. It was the ceremonial first pitches at White Sox games are off the rails.
Yeah, they're fun. And I pulled out of the parking garage across the street at around 9 minutes after 6 o'clock, and I just made it to see that, because with everything going on in the city right now, getting around downtown is just a nightmare. I heard you say you had a crawl yesterday.
What, is it Pokemon?
It's Pokemon, and there was a concert in the band Shell yesterday as well, so there was all kinds of stuff going on, and it's tough navigating. I have volunteered, because I believe in service work, I truly do, to help out if the city wants me a day or two out of the year to teach people in traffic management how to blow that whistle they're given. That would help get pedestrians across the street so more cars can get through the intersection. When that light turns yellow, pedestrians need to hustle a little bit, and sometimes the people wearing the vests aren't watching or aren't blowing their whistle.
They're giving a silent wave that doesn't do as much.
Take charge of the situation, kids.
I will
keep
also say, having just been in New York, people in Chicago drivers do not use their horn 5% of what New York drivers do.
You're right, but today is a day when people are horn happy because they're sick of several days of it consecutively, I think.
Okay, well, I mean, the official soundtrack of New York City is a car horn.
It's such a part of that because it's bouncing off the big buildings. Yeah. Like, it's just, there is something about it that is very charming and annoying if you spend too much time in it.
It's omnipresent. Like, I was there 4 days, and by the third or fourth day, I was like, oh, yeah, it's just
it's like a breeze.
It's just a constant.
It's just always there.
Every single media member, it seemed like, was at the White Sox game last night. I was the weird one watching game 6 of the NBA Finals.
Well, we were pretty
like, it was weird.
We were pretty lucky because the group that we had, like, we were lucky enough to be in a suite. And the guy that runs the suite, we said, like, look, we're watching the game, but we're also watching the game. So can we get the basketball game on? And we enjoyed it and hung out, and it was a good time. But you're right. There are a lot of people that were out there. It was that game was – there's a lot there to chew on.
An amazing amount. Like, I can't remember. I mean, listen, I shouldn't say that. 2016 was pretty epic in terms of storylines for an NBA Finals. But in terms of storylines that materialized by the end of the series that were not there at the beginning of the series.
It's crazy.
That doesn't happen in basketball. Basketball is the predictable sport that crowns the true champion. I can't remember an NBA Finals where by the end of Game 6, so many things had happened that you could have never foreshadowed at the beginning of Game 1.
I'll take you a step further. I can't remember any time in sports history when a dynasty, or even let's just say a defending champion trying to repeat, has two key players suffer injuries in the final two games of the championship series, both of them likely to not participate next year.
And a dynasty concludes
like that,
and it seismically changes everything.
Yep.
In the NBA.
Yes.
And that's what to me.
Get busy, LeBron. I want to see the Lakers matter next year because the finals are better when you're in them.
They're the favorite next year. They should be. I am shocked at how quickly the storylines in the NBA turn over. And now it's championships over. Great. All right. Draft is coming up. Well, the free agency's coming up. Let's get after it.
The NBA is the best at that.
It's awesome.
Their calendar is absolutely perfect. Finals end, draft, free agency July 1st, and then that's what makes it a 24/7, 365 league. We have Chuck Swirsky, Mr. Canada, in studio.
Mr. Canada? When did he get that on his business card?
It's on his business.
Do you follow him on Twitter?
I did work in Toronto, Danny. You made me forget about that. I've been at the 416.
So he will join us in studio at 3. Matt Spiegel in studio at 4. Plenty of stories from the Sox game, the meaningfulness of the game tonight. Shep is panicking over the Cubs.
He is.
NBA, Father's Day. We've got a lot to get into.
Yeah, and Lawrence, happy Father's Day to you. And you said something I thought was very poignant a year or so ago when talking about your dad, that you can be in a room with him and it can just be quiet. You guys can be doing your own things, reading a book or whatever, and you still feel like you're spending good quality time with him because he's a real peaceful guy. He's not quite as type A as you are.
He gets me.
That was cool.
It's really weird, but
you can talk or not talk forever, like in one of those funny Christopher Guest movies.
Me and my dad will sit on the couch and not say a word for 30 minutes, and we're both totally fine.
Sweet hanging.
It's great.
It's the best.
Thanks, guys. Have a great Father's Day. Mac, have a good weekend. Danny, enjoy yourselves with today's show.
Thank you, Lawrence Holmes. Take it away, Tanny.